On Press TV this hour, the Israeli foreign minister calls for expelling more Palestinians from their homes. In Pakistan, several people die in U.S.-led cross-border attacks from Afghanistan. Human Rights Watch says Bahrain's human rights situation is deteriorating. And the International Monetary Fund warns of a jobless economic recovery. Hello, everybody. Those were the headlines of 2200 hours. GMT in Tehran, where we are, it's 1:30 a.m. You're watching Press TV. Israel's foreign minister, Avigdor Lieberman, has once again brought up his controversial plan to expel Palestinians from their homes. Lieberman was addressing the 65th session of the UN General Assembly. On Tuesday, he also played down hopes of peace with Palestinians, saying a deal could take decades. He said that the guiding principle for a final agreement should not be, quote, land for peace, but rather an exchange of populated territory. The speech caused a walkout by Palestinian delegates. The remarks also came as the new round of U.S.-backed talks between Israel and the Palestinian Authority are on the verge of collapse. This after Israel ended its partial freeze on settlement activities. UN Human Rights Council has announced that the International Criminal Court may launch an investigation into Israel's deadly May the 31st attack on the Gaza-bound flotilla. News comes as UN experts accuse Tel Aviv of withholding critical evidence to suppress the actual events of that tragic day. The UN-appointed authorities report that Tel Aviv is withholding still photos and video footage belonging to several reporters and other activists. Meanwhile, the Human Rights Council has concluded that there is clear evidence to back prosecution against Israel. The organization accuses Tel Aviv of torture and murder when its troops stormed the flotilla. It also says that six of those killed were, quote, victims of summary execution. A total of nine Turkish activists lost their lives when Israeli soldiers attacked the eighth flotilla in international waters. To give us a better view of this issue, I'm going to bring in Dr. Alfred Lambermon Weber. He is an international lawyer joining us on the phone from Vancouver in Canada. Doctor, as always, it's good to talk to you. Israel killed eight activists on a Gaza-bound flotilla in international waters, like I was saying. The UN blamed Israel for the brutal attack, and there are individuals as well as state-level plaintiffs in the case now. So what is the International Criminal Court waiting for, would you say?
Well, I think that, as you stated, the key ingredient from a legal perspective that we have here is the ICC, the criminal court jurisdiction, because the criminal offenses were committed on board a flag state ship of the Comoros Islands. Procedurally now, a case would have to be brought in the International Criminal Court. That case could be either brought by the Comoros Islands itself, or it could be brought by any parties associated with the ship or with the Free Gaza movement or family members of the victims or any other parties. Now, procedurally, that would have to go to the chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Court. And unless the Comoros Islands itself brought the action, he may or may not have a certain amount of prosecutorial discretion here. The issue that Israel is going to say at the court is that it is not a signatory to the International Criminal Court Rome of Statute Treaty. However, in this case, that does not matter because the ICC has jurisdiction because the offenses were committed on board a ship that is a flag state for a signatory to the Rome Statute. So we are now waiting for one or more parties to bring this action at the International Criminal Court. The fact that Desmond da Silva was in fact a former UN war crimes prosecutor for the Sierra Leone case of war crimes is a good sign, because he has had experience in these matters and can bring expert guidance and advice to the various parties wanting to bring these cases.
Dr. Weber, what signal would you say will it send if the international judicial system fails to bring Israel to justice over the flotilla attack?
Well, if the prosecutor of the International Criminal Court fails to do so, and we know that even as of 2007, there were already 241 cases that were brought to the prosecutor of war crimes committed in Iraq by members of the U.S. and the UK armed forces that the prosecutor failed to carry forward. And if the prosecutor does not go forward in this case, then clearly that prosecutor is compromised by what I would call the International War Crimes Racketeering Organization, which, as we know, is controlled by political Zionism. And I have said this publicly in international speeches with evidentiary documents and backup. So this is not a matter of rhetoric. So this is going to be a very important case. We have to go step by step, though, and the first case is to see now that Mr. da Silva, who has a background in war crimes prosecution, to see whether, in fact, there are parties that will develop a case and bring it before the prosecution. These legal cases have to go step by step and have to have a great deal of rigor and integrity at each step.
Okay, many thanks. Alfred Lambert-Wan Weber, Dr. Weber, actually, an international lawyer in Vancouver, Canada. Many thanks for joining Press TV. Israel's Navy has intercepted an aid boat bound for Gaza, just miles from the besieged coastal strip. Israeli warships have escorted the British-flagged vessel Irene to the port city of Ashdod. Irene was in international waters when it was stopped. 10 Israeli, American, and European Jewish activists were on board that vessel. Reports say 3 Jewish activists are on their way out of Israel, while a 4th is awaiting deportation. 5 Israeli activists have meanwhile been released without being charged with anything. Gaza has been under an Israeli siege since 2007. Tel Aviv has repeatedly prevented relief convoys from moving food and other supplies to Gazans. Human rights activist Eddie Mormack tells us more about the dire situation in the coastal strip now.
The extent of the siege still continuing, still stopping vital supplies coming in, still making sure that Palestinians can't live in a normal way, with a normal economic climate, with normal expectations of what can come in and what can come out, both in terms of products, both in terms of health supplies, and in terms of people moving. They can't go out still, they can't come in. Only the very few that have scholarships that still doesn't guarantee them getting in and out. You go to the refugee camps, you can see how much the children are living in poverty. You can see how much that the houses have lacking in water. 90% of the water is not drinkable. You can see also just the general malaise in people's minds. There is not hope there, because they're in a straitjacket. And this is exactly what the siege is all about. Israeli officials called it putting them on a diet.
At least 9 Pakistanis have been killed in separate attacks by U.S.-led forces, the third such incident in recent days. It rings a bell that there is a new twist in the U.S. attacks on Pakistan's soil. Let's take a closer look.
Pakistani security officials have confirmed that NATO forces in the eastern Afghan province of Khost shelled a border town in Pakistan. At least 5 people have been killed, and all of the victims are civilians. The deaths come as a U.S. drone attack in Pakistan's south Waziristan has killed another 4 people. Also on Monday, 2 NATO helicopters crossed over into Pakistan via Afghanistan and killed scores of Pakistanis. Islamabad has slammed the strikes. Pakistan's Ministry of Foreign Affairs called for an end to all attacks on its soil. It said such strikes are in violation of Pakistan's sovereignty. The ministry also threatened to, quote, consider response options if similar attacks continued. However, voices are rising in Pakistan that the government is not determined enough to stop the Americans from conducting such operations.
We have heard from the rights activists. We have also seen statement from the opposition parties. They are quite furious on this. They really want Pakistani government to respond. They really want Pakistani government to suspend NATO supply line from this side of the border, because Pakistan has got a lot of leverage to stop NATO and also to stop Americans. But it seems what opposition has pointed out, there is not a determination by the government of Pakistan to stop NATO. There is no clear indication from Pakistani government to stop the Americans.
Attacks by manned NATO aircraft are rare in Pakistan, but drone strikes have dramatically increased over the past weeks. September has seen the highest number of the U.S. drone attacks in a single month. U.S. officials say they have an agreement with Islamabad that allows their aircraft to chase security threats into Pakistan. Islamabad, however, denies outright that such an agreement exists. A glance at its statistics reveals that Washington is expanding attacks on Pakistani soil. This raises the question that, is Washington shifting the focus of the war from Afghanistan to Pakistan? And if so, what are the reasons behind such a policy switch? And what consequences could the non-UN sanctioned attacks on Pakistan have for the U.S.?
Well, Human Rights Watch has written a letter to the ruler of Bahrain expressing its concern over the deteriorating human rights situation in that Persian Gulf state. The letter was addressed to King Sheikh Hamad bin Isa Al Khalifa, the president of Bahrain's Center for Human Rights. Nabil Rajab tells us more about the situation in Manama.
Bahrain is living in an undeclared state of emergency, and that we have hundreds of people are detained since the beginning of the month of Ramadan. We documented something like 300 people, systematic tortures against almost all of them. At least one cleric, Shia cleric, were transferred to the military hospital since a week time now, after being bleeding from his stomach because of the torture. Hundreds of websites were blocked, and many papers that belong to societies running to the coming election are banned or shut down. And human rights activists are targeted, detained, and tortured.
Well, let's bring in some more expert view into this matter. All the way from Mobile in Alabama, Dr. Hussein Abdullah, actually is joining us. He is the director of Americans for Democracy and Human Rights in Bahrain. Many thanks, Dr. Abdullah, for joining Press TV. Why has the West turned, have turned a blind eye to the human rights violations in Bahrain, would you say, doctor?
Well, I would like to start with a correction. I'm not a doctor, so now the West did not turn a complete blind eye. There are tens of human rights organizations and political activists and also politicians in the West and from the United States especially that condemned and raised concern about the situation in Bahrain. You just mentioned Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, Frontline, Islamic Human Rights Commission, the members of the United States Congress, the State Department, the British Embassy, British government. So the West did not turn a blind eye. However, the media did not pay a lot of attention on the pressure that the Bahraini government is resisting from the West to ease on its human rights practices and to the demand to release these political prisoners and investigate these torture claims independently.
Okay, if you're saying the media has not actually been that attentive to the issue, why do you think that is? Whose purpose does it serve?
It serves the purpose of Bahrain. Now, the West has a special relationship with the government of Bahrain. Bahrain is the station for the Fifth Fleet. So there is a very narrow walk, if you may, between Bahrain and the West, especially Bahrain and the United States. The United States does not want to upset the government of Bahrain. At the same time, there are some human rights standards that American politicians require from their ally. So it's the mutual interest, and especially with the conditions in the region, in the Persian Gulf region, the tension with Iran, add to that the tension between Saudi Arabia and Yemen. I mean, the border tension between Saudi Arabia and Yemen, the Palestinian-Israeli talk. So there are so many problems when it comes to the region. So Bahrain is one tiny issue. So overlooking that or not paying attention to the standard or the size that they should, they're overlooking the violations in Bahrain.
Okay.
However,
yeah.
Statements and direct talk with the Bahraini authorities has been established and has been made.
Exactly. Then now that you're mentioning the authorities there, Hussein Abdullah, what needs to be done to ensure that Bahrain's rulers cannot get away with what they're doing to the opposition ahead of the elections, especially?
Well, the one thing that needs to be understood, that a stable Bahrain is much more important to the West than Bahrain that is full of tension, full of problems, full of riots, that's what we see right now, and full of political prisoners. Political prisoners and torture practices and going back to the old ways of ruling Bahrain will not only harm Bahrain's political ruling family, but also going to harm the West interest in the country. So the message should be clear, or the message that should be understood from the West, that a democratic Bahrain to some extent, a free Bahrain, a Bahrain that does not have political prisoners, is not only in the interest of the people of Bahrain, but also in the interest of the West, that look at Bahrain as a viable ally in the region.
Okay, many thanks. Hussein Abdullah, Director of Americans for Democracy and Human Rights in Bahrain, joining us from Mobile in Alabama. Let's move on to other stories now. The International Monetary Fund, or as it's called, the IMF, says the global economic recovery remains uncertain because of the problems in job markets. The organization's head says the recovery of the global economy is still fragile. This because not enough jobs are being created to secure the rebound. Dominic Strauss-Kahn says the world's largest economy, the U.S., still risks a dip back into the recession. The IMF and the World Bank will come together next week for their annual meeting. Ahead of the gathering, Strauss-Kahn said it was only fair that European countries give up chairs at the IMF board to emerging economies. In the aftermath of the floods in Pakistan, over 10 million children are expected to miss school. Press TV's Javed Rana reports on how the health and education of children are being compromised in the southern Punjab region of that country. Let's have a closer look at that.
An alternative school with boarding and lodging for children affected by the unprecedented floods in Pakistan. But this informal school is being run by a banned militant group now working under a different name in the southern Punjab province.
In a situation when the flood water has destroyed over 10,000 schools, there are areas where children are getting informal educations in traditional madrasas like this one and also in the makeshift camps. However, the future of the education of other majority students still hangs in balance.
As per UN estimates, the floods that began in July this year destroyed between 5 to 7% of schools in Pakistan.
We just seem to forget children in emergencies, which should not be the case. Because if these children are out of school, their miseries and their problems would be enhanced many more. It is very, very alarming situation. A country where the literacy rate is barely 50%, the actual literacy rate, and you have another million children who might not be having access to school.
The UN says 1.8 million school-going children are now at the risk of discontinuing their education.
The building of our school is now surrounded by flood water and demolished all the classroom. Obviously, we can't go to school now.
That's not the whole story about the miseries of children. The UN reports that more than 100,000 children left homeless by the flood are in danger of dying simply because they neither have access to clean water nor have enough to eat.
My kids are suffering from malaria, dysentery, and many other diseases because of drinking contaminated water and eating unhygienic food. Children would obviously suffer from all kinds of diseases because there is no clean drinking water.
According to the United Nations, the flood water has affected more than 10 million children, which is almost half of the total number of the people have been affected in one-fifth territory of Pakistan, which is now underwater. Going by what UN estimates, the threat of malnutrition and catching waterborne diseases among these children looms large. Javed Rana, Southern Punjab Province, Pakistan.
Well, that's about it. More news on PressTV.ir. It's football's West Asian Championships now. Find all the details next with Amir Hussein on Sports International.